2:3-6. We can be sure that we know God if we obey his commands. Anyone who says, "I know God," but does not obey God's commands is a liar, and the truth is not in that person. But if someone obeys God's teachings, then it is that person God's love has truly reached its goal. This is how we can be sure we are living in God. Whoever says that he lives in God must live as Jesus lived.
This is from 1 John 2:15-17. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If you love the world, the love of the Father is not in you. These are the ways of the world, wanting to please our sinful selves, wanting the sinful things we see, and being too proud of what we have. None of these come from the Father, but all of them come from the world. The world and everything that people want in it are passing away, but the person who does what God wants lives forever.
1 John 3:16-24. This is how we know what real love is. Jesus gave his life for us, so we should give our lives for our brothers and sisters. Suppose someone has enough to live and sees a brother or sister in need, but doesn't help. Then God's love is not living in that person. My children, we should love people not only with words and talk, but by our actions and true caring. This is the way we know that we belong to the way of truth. When our hearts make us feel guilty, we can still have peace before God. God is greater than our hearts, and he knows everything. My dear friends, if our hearts do not make us feel guilty, we can come without fear into God's presence, and God gives us what we ask for because we obey God's commands and do what pleases him. This is what God commands, that we believe in his Son, Jesus Christ, and that we love each other, just as he commanded. The people who obey God's commands live in God, and God lives in them. We know that God lives in us because of the Spirit God gave us.
This series that we're looking at, for those of you who haven't been here for the last couple of weeks, we're looking at 1 John, and we've described it as being a series of five keys. Five keys to live as the family of God. So what is a key? Well, a key is something that opens things up for us. It unlocks a door or a barrier. And sometimes you need keys to operate in a certain order or sequence for them to work. To give you an example, so I have a slightly complicated commute to and from work. A little bit of background, so a few years ago, I work at a hospital in Yeovil, and they decided to dig up the car park and build a new one. So while they were doing this, basically nobody could park at the hospital, so we all had to park off-site. I bought a little folding bike, which goes in the boot of my car. I park a little way away, and I cycle to work. And even when they'd built a lovely new multi-story car park, I'd sort of got into the habit of doing this. It gave me a bit of fresh air, a bit of exercise every morning. I still do that. I park and ride. It works for me. So tomorrow afternoon, when I come to come home, I need a series of keys. So first of all, I need my hospital key pass, which will let me out of the sneaky back door of the hospital to get out to where my bike is parked. I will then need a key to the hangar where I've locked my bike. I'll then need the key to unlock my bike, and then I'll cycle to my car. I'll then need my car key to actually drive home. And finally, I need my house key to get in when I get home. So five keys, all with a different purpose. I need all five keys to be able to get home and sit down and have a cup of tea at the end of the day. Now, Tuesday, I accidentally left my hospital name badge, my key pass, in my car. And I got to work, and of course then I had to go the long way round to go in the public entrance to the hospital. That's not the worst of it. Of course, I work in theatres, which is a locked environment. I needed my pass to get in and out of theatres. Every time I had to get into theatres, I had to buzz the bell and get somebody to let me in. It was a real nuisance. That's not the end of it. When I came to go home, I forgot that actually what I normally do is leave my bunch of keys. I'd left them in my coat pocket, and I'd left my coat pocket hanging in the theatre's changing room. I walked all the way out of the hospital, the long way round, got as far as the bike hanger, and then remembered that my keys were still in my coat pocket in the theatre's changing room that I couldn't get to because I didn't have my hospital pass. So each key is really important to actually get us where we need to get to. And like my daily commute, the keys, the five keys in 1 John, are each essential tools to help us to build on what has gone before. So 2 weeks ago, Nigel expounded on the first bit, which is know who we are. We are children of God. That is our identity. And until we know who we are, we will struggle to get any further. And he showed this beautiful light picture as an illustration of how beautiful we are in God's sight. And then an equally beautiful picture of David telling us who Jesus is, saying essentially Jesus is fully human. He is the Christ and he is divine. Now, once we know who we are and who Jesus is, only then can we truly understand how Jesus would like us to live our lives. But it's not enough, is it, to just know who Jesus is. Even the devil knows who Jesus is. It's quite interesting. This slogan, WWJD, was caught on and was commercialized, and a lot of companies made a lot of money from producing bracelets and so on about it. And a lot of people who were nothing to do with the church or Christianity got on this bandwagon. So commercially, we have, what would Jesus buy? Car companies use in their advertisements, what would Jesus drive? There was the anti-war, what would Jesus bomb? And even the what would Jesus eat biblical diet plan. So it's easy to speculate, theoretically, on what would Jesus do in any situation. But actually, it's meaningless without a relationship with Jesus himself. You see, there's an extra step to unlock the secrets of this week's passage, and it's found in chapter 3, verse 23, where it says, this is his command, to believe in the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, and to love one another as he commanded us. We need to believe in Jesus. We need to not just know about him, we need to know him for ourselves. Once we've unlocked this passage, then in a few weeks' time, Steve will be unlocking how to live victoriously. And then finally, Keith will unlock how to live in love. But to get to that point, we need to get our foundations right. We need to know who we are, we need to know who Jesus is, and we need to know him for ourselves. So that's just the background. Now we can actually start the talk. So, first of all, actively in avoiding sin. So if you've got your Bibles, you can turn to chapter 2, and we'll look at a couple of verses in our passage today. So living as Jesus did, there's two aspects to it. First of all, turning away from sin, and secondly, turning towards God. So what did Jesus do? He actively resisted and actively rejected sinful attitudes. So in chapter 2, verse 4, it says, whoever says, I know him, but does not do what he commands is a liar, and the truth is not in that person. In other words, if we say we know God, This will be demonstrated by our actions as we're going to obey God. And then in verse 15, it says, do not love the world or anything in the world, for anyone who loves the world, if anyone loves the world, love for the Father is not in them. So in other words, we are faced with a choice. We either love the world or we love God. So what does it mean when it says love the world? That's a bit of an odd expression, isn't it? So in this context, it basically talks about loving the world as being loving the sinful attitudes of this world. So if we look at this key verse in verse 16, chapter 2, it says, for the world offers only a craving for physical pleasures, a craving for everything we see, and pride in our achievements and possessions. So three basic, baseline, sinful attitudes. And from these three baseline attitudes spring sinful, everything that's to do that is of the world rather than of God. Our sin is due to underlying attitudes. These attitudes result in behavior. These attitudes are the basis or motivation underlying our sin. And if we want to go back a little bit to the very beginning of time, we can see in Genesis chapter 3, verse 6, that the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food, pleasing to the eye, and desirable for gaining wisdom. And she took some and ate it. That was the foundation of the fall of man. So each sinful, this sinful attitude was evident right at the start of time when Eve sinned in the first place. So first of all, let's look at the first attitude, this craving for physical pleasure. So the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food. This is a preoccupation with physical desires. Eve was tempted by the physical desire for the forbidden fruit, which she saw was good for food. So, for example, this sort of attitude, this cravings for physical pleasures, could give rise to addictions, lust, selfishness, and so on. So what did Jesus do? How did he live his life? How did he deal with this particular sinful attitude? Well, if we look at the time when he was in the wilderness and the devil came to tempt him, this is how he dealt with this particular temptation. The devil said to him, hey, you're hungry, you've been without food for 40 days and 40 nights, here you go, have some bread. He tried to appeal to Jesus' desire for physical need, physical pleasure. But Jesus addressed and defeated that temptation. And he decided to put his relationship with God above his physical desire for food. So that's the first attitude Jesus slam dunked. No problem, there you go. So what about the second one? The woman saw that the fruit of the tree was pleasing to the eye. Remember what it said in 1 John chapter 2, craving for everything we see, this second attitude. This is craving and accumulating things, possessions, stuff. It might give rise to sins such as greed, stealing, lack of generosity, holding on to things that we want for ourselves, not giving things away. How did Jesus deal with this particular sinful temptation? Well, it says in Matthew that the devil tried to say to him, here you go, I'm going to give you everything. I'm going to give you all these kingdoms. You can have everything, all the possessions you could possibly want. And Jesus turned around and said, no, I don't want possessions. I just want to worship the Lord your God. Temptation attitude number two, slam dunked. How about the third one? So the woman saw that the fruit was desirable for gaining wisdom. So pride in our achievements and possessions, obsession with status or importance. So this fruit was desirable for gaining wisdom, and the devil says, if you have this fruit, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God. Here you go, your status will increase. You will be amazing, you'll be like God. Here you go, Eve. So these are the sort of attitudes that might give rise to self-righteousness, to pride, even jealousy, envy. What did Jesus do about that when tempted with that? Well, the devil said to him, here you go, just chuck yourself off this cliff and the angels will capture you and you'll be amazing. You'll be, you know, your status will improve and people will worship you because of these miraculous tricks you can do. But actually, Jesus rejected the temptation to do miraculous tricks simply for the sake of glorifying himself. So we know that we follow Jesus, who has dealt with every single one of these sinful attitudes that we might be beset with. So how would Jesus live? He rejects sin. What about us, though? Well, Jesus promised that he'll give us strength to resist sin. So it is possible for us to live as Jesus did and actively avoid sin. It says in Romans chapter 6, verse 14, for sin shall no longer be your master because you're not under the law, but under grace. We're no longer bound by sin, but which has been, because it's been defeated by Jesus once and for all on the cross. Those chains have been broken. We are not bound by sin anymore. So having got our foundations secure, we then reject sin. What else would Jesus do? How else does Jesus live? Well, he says in 1 John to obey his commandments. That seems like a bit of a vague, impossible task. How do we obey God's commandments? But it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because Jesus himself was asked back in the day, What are God's commands? What do you have us to do? And if you remember, Jesus summarized all of God's commands into a very simple statement to be found in Matthew chapter 22, verses 37 to 40. Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second's like it, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. So the entire law or the entire instruction to love God and obey God's commandments hangs on these statements. So first of all, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. So if we know who Jesus is and we know him for who he is, if we obey his word, his love will be made complete in us. It says in our reading today, if anyone obeys his word, love for God is truly made complete in them. This is how we know we are in him. Whoever claims to live in him must live as Jesus did. So that's the first thing. Love God with all your heart and all your soul, all your strength. Second part of this instruction is to love others as you love yourself. Because it says, this is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. And we also ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. But what actually does that mean, laying down our lives for our brothers and sisters? John gives an example, doesn't he? He says, what about giving money to those in need? How else can we? So, you know, how else showing God's love? Because sometimes I think it might be slightly harder to live for others than to die for them. Because sacrificial love involves putting others' needs above your own needs, making them a priority. And there are lots of examples if you have a look for various different stories or whatever about people who have sacrificed their lives for others. But actually what I was interested in is a story about somebody who just lived for others. And I found this example in a book you might have come across called Heavenly Man. It's by Watchman Nee. He's a Chinese evangelist. And he tells a story about a Christian paddy farmer, rice farmer. And he lived in some high mountains and he had some fields. And you can see these fields are all tiered. And every morning he went out and he opened up the drainage system that allowed water to drain down into his fields. But later on that morning, he came out and he found that his fields were dry. And his neighbour, who lived in the fields below him, had basically cut a little hole in the boundary and allowed all of this paddy farmer's water to drain from his fields into the neighbour's fields. So all of his work and effort, getting up early in the morning to make sure his fields were full of water, were actually wasted because the water was just being stolen effectively by his neighbour. So what should the Christian paddy farmer do? What would Jesus do? So what he actually did is he started to get up even earlier in the morning. And he went out and first of all, he filled his neighbor's paddy fields with water. And then having filled his neighbor's paddy fields with water, he then worked on his own rice fields and made sure his rice fields were full of water. And the end result of this is that his neighbour saw what Christian love was like in action, and his Christian his neighbour became a Christian. John says, "Show truth by your action." So how can we be like that Christian paddy farmer? This was love in action. This was getting up early. This was actually denying himself an extra couple of hours in bed. This was getting up while it was still dark and actually doing something for somebody else, for somebody else's benefit. This was real love in action. Now, we don't live in mountains in China and we don't tend paddy fields. At least I don't think we do. So what does that mean to us in Chard? In our day-to-day lives. And this is going to be different for every one of us here. Maybe it's giving time or money sacrificially to others. Maybe it's giving practical help to your neighbour. Maybe it's offering your home to others. Maybe it's speaking to somebody new, even if you feel that you're a bit shy. Whatever it is, listen to God's voice and say, how would you have me behave in this situation? How can I show Christian love in action? And then the final part of this talk is about loving yourself. Now, what I don't mean is the selfish, I'm the most important person type of self-love. This is the sort of love and respect that you hold for yourself when you understand your identity is in Christ, you are a child of God. It says in chapter 3, verse 1, "See what great love the Father has lavished on us that we should be called the children of God, and that is what we are." As a child of God, I am loved by God. I am special. I am important to Him. I'm no longer a slave to fear. I am a child of God. So we have these three commandments summarized here. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind. Love others as you love yourself. Love yourself. But if we just switch these around a little bit and look at the three keys that we've been looking at. Love yourself. Know who you are. You are a child of God. Key number two, know who Jesus is. And knowing who he is, you can know him and love him. And thirdly, live as Jesus did. Live sacrificial lives in loving service of others. So just like the fictional characters in Sheldon's novel, when you go out today, ask yourselves, what would Jesus do? Do I need to turn away from a wrong attitude? Do I need to choose to love others and put them first? How can I live as Jesus lived?